This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Leech Whelan. Tonight we're observing World Population Day, which happened yesterday.
So first, we're looking into what the stats tell us as we're likely to hit the 8 billion mark this year. And then how are different countries trying to boost or control their population numbers?
Tell us, do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and as we said, yesterday was World Population Day. And essentially, this day aims to direct attention to population issues, and by extension, all the different facets that this impacts, right? Whether social or economic or environmental. And World Population Day is actually an extension of the Day of 5 Billion, which was observed back in the 11th of July, 1987.
So 35 years on, we're going to reach 8 billion. That's up from 7 billion in 2011. And according to, what a big acceleration that was. Yeah. But according to the United Nations, this number is expected to rise to 8.5 billion in 2030. Speaking of rapid increases, 9.7 in 2050, 10.9 billion in, what is that even, 2100?
I think so. Until we reach it, then we'll know how to say it.
Yes, exactly. So this growth can be attributed to changes in fertility rates, extended lifespans, increasing urbanization, migration. Also worth saying that it can be attributed to a change of distribution in which countries are actually seeing population booms and which countries are not. Now, over half of the projected rise in global population up to 2050 is going to be concentrated in 8 countries. So the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, and the United Republic of Tanzania. By the way, the UN's World Population Prospects Report does also show that the global population is actually growing at its slowest since 1950. So it's quite interesting to hear all these numbers, think that it's going in a certain direction, only to recognize that the actual statistics, hence the first part of our show trying to understand what the math is telling us, the actual statistics are showing that actually the population is growing slower than it has.
It might be difficult to relate these numbers and these sort of global trends to our daily lives, right? But the reality is that growing population, but also the way in which our population evolves or grows, often impacts our day-to-day lives in very significant ways. For instance, what it means to be an aging society, what it means to need particular kinds of care, or on the other end of things, what it means to be a country where you don't have enough young people to contribute to economic growth, to plan for the future. So that's on one end of the spectrum. On the other end of it, you have, of course, your usual issues of competing for resources, overpopulation, stretching everything, really, from the environment to food. And so I think it is important for us to keep in mind that when we talk about these large numbers, they actually do have day-to-day impact on us.
And conversely, that individual choices made for individual reasons are also contributing to population growth,
yes,
or population stagnation, or what have you. I don't think we have the time necessarily to get into it, but a lot of the ways in which this conversation are framed, aside from it being personal or, for that matter, from an environmental or food security point of view, one of the ways in which this conversation is framed is also from a capitalistic point of view. Because, of course, when we talk about things like replacement rates or aging populations, it has been pointed out that in some senses what we're talking about is, are there enough people working? Do you have enough people who have been born who can replace the people who have been working thus far in order to make the systems run as they have been? I know that's quite a dark thing to say out loud, but that's, I think, just one element of the conversation when we talk about population, because I've never liked the term replacement rate. I know it's just a term, but it's because it is seen also through this exact context of, actually, when we say replacement rate, what do we mean? You know, who is replacing who?
Yeah. Well, if you want to just bring that home, actually, in 2020, Malaysia's population was 32.4 million. We're projected to grow to 41.5 million by 2040. And in a statement yesterday, our chief statistician, Dato' Sri Dr. Mohamad Uzir Mahidin, said that we will likely become an aging population by 2030, with people aged over 60 expected to make up 15.3% of our population. We are also currently below that replacement rate, which is 2.1. We're currently at 1.7. So a lot to unpack there in terms of not just for us, but in a global sense, what these trends mean. But to keep the question a little bit more personal, we'd like to hear from you. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dr. Lai Xiao Li, who is coordinator of the Population Studies Unit at University of Malaya. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:13. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and today we are marking World Population Day, which was yesterday. So first, we're going to try and understand global trends and numbers and what these mean when it comes to how they translate into our lives and on the ground. So send your thoughts our way. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Lai Xiao Li, coordinator of the Population Studies Unit at University of Malaya. Dr. Lai, welcome to the show. Now, to start us off, what's the significance of highlighting World Population Day? What are some of the key focuses that stakeholders usually take into account every year?
The World Population Day is celebrated on July 11th to create greater awareness of current population issues and their link to development and the environment. So the population issues extend more than just mere numbers. Since the 1990s, the population concerns have actually shifted from numerical targets to the quality of the population, such as human capital, gender equity, human rights and choices, and quality of life.
So this year's theme is focused on building a resilient future for all, which involves opportunities and ensuring that people get their rights. What did you make of this theme, and how well does it line up with our current global state?
Yes, the theme for this year's World Population Day celebration is actually in line with the United Nations Agenda for Sustainable Development, which calls for leaving no one behind. This year's focus is more on protecting the human rights and allowing individuals to make informed choices in the timing and frequency of births. In Malaysia, various activities have been carried out to commemorate the World Population Day, including the hosting of the National Population Conference. So the Population Studies Unit of University of Malaya is actually one of the co-hosts. Malaysia also places great emphasis on gender equality and the role of women in the family and national development.
So the UN's World Population Prospects 2022 report basically reveals that we will reach a population of 8 billion by November. Could you help us get a sense of where this projection is coming from?
The UN has been revising its population projection regularly to incorporate the latest population statistics collected from countries worldwide. So it considers the changing demographic trends in terms of fertility, mortality, and migration. The data actually came from the vital statistics, population censuses, and sample surveys. It has produced a few alternative projections according to different demographic scenarios. The most likely scenario is the medium variant. The UN population database, it provides estimates for the past and present, and it also provides the projections up to the year 2100 for each country.
Now, talk to us about the countries with the highest population rate. Which countries top the list?
Countries in the African continent, they register the highest population growth rates. In fact, most of the global population increase occur in the least developed countries and in the African continent. For instance, the population in Niger and Uganda, these countries in the African continent, they are growing at a rate of more than 3% per annum. In the developed countries and East Asia, the population actually has stopped growing. So the factors that influence the high population growth rate, okay, in the least developed countries are due to the high birth rate brought about by early marriage and low contraceptive use. In addition, some studies also shown that high fertility is related to low social and economic development.
Now, on the other hand, what are examples of countries with low population growth?
In the past, the Western countries, they used to have the lowest population growth rates. Several countries in East Europe experienced a depopulation of they are having actually a minus population growth rate of at least minus 1% per annum. Owing to the rapid fertility decline, so many countries in East and Southeast Asia, they have also registered very low rates of population growth, so with some having negative growth.
Right, so on that then, how do countries in Southeast Asia compare to others when it comes to population?
Okay, so talking about Southeast Asia, the population in Southeast Asia made up about 8.4% of the global population. So the population growth rate in Southeast Asia is at 0.77% per annum. This is slightly lower than the global average of 0.82%. Indonesia is the most populous country in Southeast Asia, and it is also the fourth most populous country worldwide. So at 273 million population in Indonesia, while the population growth rate of Laos, okay, is the highest in Southeast Asia at 1.4% per annum. The population of Malaysia is growing at about 1.1% and it is on a declining trend.
Yeah, so it has been reported, right, that birth rates in developing nations are higher. What can you tell us about this and why is this the case?
Okay, so it is well established that the poor have more children and this will perpetuate the vicious cycle of poverty. The low-resource countries, they are struggling to provide basic amenities instead of channeling the resources for human capital development. These nations require assistance to move out of the poverty trap.
And what are some challenges that come along, actually, with high birth rates?
Okay, so the high birth rates imply a high dependency burden, such that the countries are unable to reap the demographic dividend as experienced in the developed countries. So the government would have to provide for the educational and healthcare needs and to create sufficient jobs to absorb the entrance to the labor market.
So there are reports of how India is on course to surpass China as the world's most populous country. What impact do you think this will have on India as well as the rest of the world?
Okay, so India's population, we can see that it is now growing much more rapidly than that of China. And it will overtake China as the world's most populous country in 2023. The gap will widen in time to come when China's population is projected to shrink to 771 million okay, by the year 2100, while that of India will increase to 1.53 billion. So we can see a huge gap. So this implies that India will be emerging as an increasingly dominant market for international trade, provided that its economy is also growing.
So experts have also talked about how the aging population is expected to increase in coming years. Could you walk us through what the numbers tell us at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So population is defined as aging. If 7% is age 65 and above, and it is considered as aged if it exceeds 14%. At the global level, the percentage of the population age 65 and above has increased from 5.3% in 1970 to 9.6% today. And this is projected to increase further to 16.5% by 2050. So if we look at Malaysia, Malaysia is now an aging nation with 7% of its population age 65 and above, and it will be an aged nation about 20 years from now.
So what are the effects of being an age? What are the effects of an aging population on countries?
So usually an aging population is accompanied by a rise in non-communicable diseases. It will strain the healthcare system of a country. In addition, the increasing number of older persons requires long-term care, and this would pose a challenge to the capacity of the family and healthcare system, especially in light of the shrinking family size due to the declining fertility. Another major challenge for population aging is meeting financial needs of older people. The social protection system is inadequate to provide for the needs of older people, and many of them may not have sufficient financial resources.
The Department of Statistics Malaysia released a statement today indicating that life expectancy at birth in 2021 increased by nearly 12 years. What did you make of this and the impact it's going to have on our population as a whole?
So in general, a male and a female in Malaysia are expected to live for 73 and 77 years, respectively. So given that the overall life expectancy in Japan is 85 years, there is still room for improvement in the case of Malaysia. The increasing life expectancy will accelerate the pace of population aging, which has been gaining momentum. As a result, there will be a shift from the young dependency to old dependency burden, which requires different policy interventions.
So we are going to be speaking about this later on in the show, but what are some key policy measures that you'd like to see being implemented to tackle population issues?
Given that the fertility level in Malaysia is approaching an ultra-low level, which would result in labour shortage and ageing population, there is a need for the government to arrest the decline in fertility rate. The government is already taking steps to slow down the rate of fertility decline, including adopting a work-life balance to enable women to combine child rearing with career development. Efforts are also being made to improve childcare facilities. In addition, incentives to encourage childbirth have been put in place, including baby bonuses in certain states.
Dr. Lai, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Lai Xiao Li, coordinator of the Population Studies Unit at University Malaya, helping us understand really population growth trends and numbers. After this, we'll be discussing policy issues and policy measures that we'd like to see. But let us know, do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
I'd like to add on to that, actually. So do you want a small or large family, no children at all? And how much of that is actually powered by the kinds of things we're talking about today when it comes to larger population concerns? Because, and, you know, don't answer if it's too personal, by all means, because I think the decision on this is always a very, very personal thing. People have a variety of reasons as to why you swing one way or the next. But I am curious, in light of what we're talking about today, how much of that is driven by by worries around things like resources or the environment or, you know, just the sorts of things we're talking about with a wider increase of population?
Well, that's actually coming through in a number of the messages that we're getting already. So for instance, KW says, I'm child-free by choice. Not that I don't want kids, but I doubt I can give them a good life. I don't want to burden other people. I always believe that we shouldn't have kids if we can't afford it.
That's a very interesting perspective because I've heard people say this, but I think there is also the counterpoint that you sometimes hear, which is, no, but you can make it work. You know, if you want to have children, you can make it work. I think, therefore, this is something that we're going to get into in the second half of our show, actually, but it's where the state comes in terms of providing an actual supportive infrastructure for you to feel, okay, I personally don't feel that I can give my kid, say, a very easy ride through life, but I know that there are enough social structures such that I can give my child a good education, a good place to live, you know, just all these different things. And if you don't feel you have that, it makes this decision a lot harder.
And that's exactly the issue when politicians or people in authority make comments about women having to do more women having to have more children, right? Because that conversation is often had in a vacuum without necessarily talking about the things we need to put in place to enable that, to make that choice an easy one to make. We will be getting into all of that later, but in the meantime, do keep sending your thoughts our way. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? How much of this is driven by these questions about population growth, resources, and so on? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're marking World Population Day, which was yesterday. Well, first we looked at trends and numbers. After this, we're going to be taking a look at policies and measures that need to be in place. But we'd like to hear from you. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to our next guest, I think we have time for some messages.
Yes, so we've been asking whether, or rather how much also of that decision, whether or not to have children, how many children is driven by stuff outside of family planning, right? Down to how you live, what you can afford. And Munif, for example, is saying, I live in Shah Alam, I work in Puchong, yet I take 2 hours to drive to work daily because of jams. I don't want to shoot myself in the foot and make it 3 or 4 hours in the future, so I'm probably going to have a small family. The 3 to 4 hour jam is no exaggeration, by the way. That's just called a Tuesday in Jakarta. And that's a fair point. I mean, I think the extension from 2 hours to 3 to 4 is important, especially if you think about the age gap when it comes to your children. So how many schools, how many school drop-offs are you going to have to be doing? You know, how many different after-school classes are you going to have to consider? There are a lot of things that are factored in, I think, to your daily schedule and how it will be impacted through having or through choosing to have children.
Yeah, so quality of life, right, is a big big choice that you have to decide on if you decide to have children. Benjamin says, it isn't just an issue of fertility, but it's also the consequences after having children. So things like affordability to have kids, the affordability to care for aging parents, rising inflation, stagnating salaries leading to both parents working with no time to build a family, compounded by the need to care for aging parents.
Yeah, that's a depressing list.
I mean, that is a sandwich generation list right there.
It is. And it also, I think, speaks to policies that actually live beyond population policies. Because I think when we think about that, or at least for me personally, when we talk about policies as they pertain to population boosting or control, the things that come to mind are, for example, Singapore offering incentives, South Korea doing the same, offering incentives for people or for couples to have more children at a younger age, in fact. And yet, those countries have it different to us. But for us, if we're talking about it, it goes above and beyond, right? It needs to be policies or structures that address the issue of how much it costs to have kids, whether or not there are ways for me to ensure that my parents, my aging parents, have access to good and affordable healthcare. All these things affect population growth in ways that I'm not sure we're taking into account at the moment.
Just to close off, for now at least, we have Nadia, who called earlier with this cryptic remark. They just said, I want kids, but not so many, maybe 3 to 4 max.
Fair enough. I think
it's entirely subjective what not too many would lie, where that line would lie.
Exactly. And we did ask small or large. So I guess this is a medium. To me, it is large, actually. But I grew up in a smaller family.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I come from a family of 3 siblings and I don't think we're a huge family. So actually, yeah, now that I think about it, 3 to 4 sounds like a medium size to me. Keep those thoughts coming. Do you want a large or small family or no children at all? How much of this is driven by these discussions on population, resources, and so on? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Carmelo Frelito, CEO of the Center for Market Education. Carmelo, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Good evening. My pleasure.
So the UN has predicted that the world will reach a population rate of 8 billion by this November. Could you help us understand the significance of this number and the impact of it, especially as we're increasingly sensitive to issues like climate change and food security?
Well, I would like to spend a word of optimism on this, in all these gloomy discussions, I would say neo-Malthusian discussions that we have on population. Because if we look at the numbers, the world population at the beginning of the 60s, the 1960s, was just 3 billion, okay? The big jump began after World War II. Okay, if we look at these 3 billion in the 1960s, which is just a couple of generations ago, more than half of these people around the world were living in absolute poverty. Okay, now after 2 generations, just 2 generations, we have more than double the world population, almost 8 billion, and the people living in absolute poverty are 700 million. So it means less than 10% and half than the people that were living in absolute poverty in the 1960s. So this tells us that we have been doing remarkably well in being able to create more resources and to distribute these resources in a way that more people are enjoying the fruits of that resources. Ed McCloskey calculated that since the onset of the Industrial Revolution in the 1800s, up to now, the average person on planet grew the income by 900%. This never happened in the history of mankind before. So if we want to look at the future challenges, so like climate change or food security. So far, the only real challenge that for the first time when the number of people living in extreme poverty started to go up again was in 2020 because of lockdown. Lockdown has been extremely harmful for the poor. So that has been the big challenge, but I think it's something that can be quickly reverted. Looking at the future challenges, we should look at the reasons of success of the past. So being innovative, so being able to create new technologies, to create more food for more people. So for feeding a hungry world, as certain companies say. And so to unleash the human creativity so that challenges can be met thanks to technology that arises from the creativity that is embedded in humankind.
I know this is going to be a general question, but we are seeing population changes in different parts of the world, right? We said earlier that, for example, population booms are going to be concentrated likely in 8 countries, actually, up until 2050. So considering that, considering we also have aging populations here, booming populations there, what kind of population concerns are we seeing in different countries around the world?
Yeah, indeed, I think you summarized. Basically, there are countries that are facing more a winter of population, so that have to find a way to sustain an aging population, and countries that instead are really booming in terms of younger peoples. And I would add, for the case of aging populations, the problem of low and nativity, of low newborns, because this is a complex issue. Probably we will touch this a bit later when we will talk about families. But if we look historically, people start to have less children, not when they are poorer, but when they are richer. So there is an inverse relationship between income and size of the family. So it seems somehow that as we become richer, we become a little bit more selfish, maybe, if you allow me the expression. So we don't want to have babies around. We want to have more time for other hobbies. This is probably due also to the fact that a growth in income brings also less attachment to traditional values, like religious values. And if you break your link with the metaphysical part of life, then you wonder what's the reason to put in the world new babies. So why you create this link with the future if you somehow don't believe in a future anymore? So there is a metaphysical aspect, I think, that need to be associated to the phenomenon that cannot be disregarded as well.
We'll continue our conversation after this. We're speaking with Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of the Center for Market Education, on policies revolving around the question of population. We'd like to hear from you. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond frivolous matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:49. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're marking World Population Day. And we're continuing our conversation on policies around the issue of population / overpopulation, as the concern generally is. And we're speaking with Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of the Center for Market Education. Carmelo, just to pick up where we left off, what are some complications that could arise when we go down the path of implementing population control measures?
Allow me to say that the expression population control measures is quite terrifying to me, in the sense that it looks very scientific, but if we go down to the meaning, it means that some politicians, and you can replace the word politician with whatever name you like or you don't like, in Malaysia or around the world, or some bureaucrat from the United Nations is putting his or her idea on how many children I should have. So I think that is an interference on the sphere of private life of individuals that should not be the concern of any government or any agency around the world at all. The concern of policy should be given a certain population with certain issues, like we have not enough young people, or we have an aging population, how we address these issues, but not how many children we really should have or not. We have seen that China has done that and has been a total disaster in terms of policy, but also in terms of the cultural consequences that you have on it. You break something in the population.
So China was something that I was thinking about a lot as well, because like you said, it's one way to see things play out writ large, right? And we've seen things like the sex imbalance within the country's population, now a rapidly aging population as a result of the one-child policy. You've already spoken about your distaste in some ways for having policies like this in place. But when thinking about it, when planning for it, how can these sorts of long-term outcomes be accounted for? Or is it simply impossible?
I think it's impossible if you consider what policy should be. I mean, policy implies recognizing what you as a human being can actually plan for the others and what you cannot. So being a good policymaker implies a huge dose of humility. So thinking that you can really plan the growth of the population without creating negative consequences for human beings is simply absurd. And even if we look at the mere economic consequences, so without touching the moral aspect, indeed, and we see this in the opposite case, so in a country which is not a communist country like Japan, but has been experiencing a winter of the population for a long time, if the population doesn't grow, there is no reason for the economy to grow. And there is no reason for saving to be accumulated. And if there are no savings, then there are no investments. So even if we don't want to touch the moral aspect, even from the economic pure economic standpoint, is not really a winning strategy.
On the flip side of this, we are also seeing a lot of countries with low birth rates trying to incentivize having children, including with things like tax breaks or even a controversial suggestion from the UK recently to tax childless people more. What's your take on all this?
I would rather play on the positive side, so try to incentivize people, so family, giving incentives and fiscal deductions to family with more children, rather than on the negative side, punishing people that for whatever reason, we must respect the choice of not having children. So fiscal incentives for numerous families, I think, makes a lot of sense and are the way to go, together also with a more holistic approach to the problem. At the beginning, you have mentioned, in example, the issue of transportation, mobility, flexibility at work, which is also important. And I would add also some further cultural element. I don't want necessarily to speak against technology, but let's think of what technology has done in our life at this perspective. We are always working. We go back home, we have access to the emails, to WhatsApp, through our phones and everything. So we never really have that break in which we say, or we are losing the ability to create that break in which we say, this is family time. So I don't look at my phone. Whoever is looking for me, I don't answer. So this is somehow compromising also our ability to build a healthy family environment. So a family in which it is not necessarily stressful to have more children, because then if you have to run after children and after your thousands of WhatsApp messages from your boss, your colleagues, and etc., then it becomes more complicated. So I think we should also try to re-educate ourselves to a healthy relationship with the means that we have at our disposal.
This was something that we spoke about a little bit earlier, actually, this idea of social structures and how they factor in. So what should a country have in place to create this sort of supportive structure for larger families?
I think where there is the fiscal side that you have mentioned, connectivity is another aspect. And I think also try to build cities in a way in which sociality is incentivized. So in which, in example, to go to a park, to a place of encounter is not too difficult, because that is where you meet people and you build enlarged family in the sense of community. And I think that community development is the biggest support for building families, because then somehow other parents are used to take care also of your children and vice versa. At least this was quite normal when I was growing up in my neighborhood back in Italy. And probably we are losing that. So, but this is not simply cultural, it's also the way in which our cities are built, the prevalence of shopping malls over different kind of social environments. So I think that also an adequate urban planning for incentivizing social re-encounter and rediscovery of community is something to be wished for.
Carmelo, what initiatives are you hoping to see the government make in preparing for our predicted population trends?
I think Malaysia is unfortunately going on a trend of aging population. So sooner or later, Malaysia will have to tackle the issue of pension funds. So a reform of pension age, a reform of how pensions are paid and collected, the funds are collected, and etc. So this will be probably the most immediate need for Malaysia. At the same time, we need to think about a social environment, a work environment in which people are allowed to take care of aging parents. You know, also the concentration of population in the urban environment is breaking the chain of natural support that instead you have in the kampung. And these are, I think, urgent measures that need to be accompanied also by a rediscovery of the importance of fertility and natality for giving new babies for the children. And in this sense, I think it's important if the government shows to be committed to build a better future, because if we see that someone there believe in the future, then people may become also less pessimistic about the future.
Carmelo, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
That was Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of the Center for Market Education, weighing in on the types of policy measures, support structures we need to have in place, taking into account our population trends, and in a larger sense, the ideal that we might want to strive for, really. We would like to hear from you. Do you want a small or large family or no children at all? How much do these conversations about population and resources weigh on those decisions? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.